most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul? Most interactive show, and really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
Set down 16 in a row right now. And Rizzo sends it high and deep to right. That is back. Tucker out of room, and it is gone. Anthony Rizzo gets the Yankees off the deck.
Anthony Rizzo, per Ken Rosenthal, is the Astros' number one free agent target. They're also considering Yuli Gurriel and Jose Abreu, but signing Rizzo would serve the dual purpose of bolstering their own roster while weakening the Yankees. Rizzo, meanwhile, faces an interesting decision whether to return to the Yankees. If he accepts the team's qualifying offer, he would earn a higher one-year salary than he might receive in a multi-year deal. He then could spend another season hitting at Yankee Stadium while also benefiting from the new shift restrictions and re-enter the market without a qualifying offer, since a player cannot receive one twice. The Yankees have given him a qualifying offer. So if the Astros were to make a move on Rizzo, they would have to give up some draft compensation. I'm unsure of the specifics of that. I will ultimately say, as far as draft picks when it comes to baseball, if you're the Houston Astros, that's probably at the back of your mind with James Click. Without James Click, like, you do not give the slightest rat's ass. I think if, as this Jeff Passan article is saying, that both Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson are in the ears of one Jim Crane, I feel like they're going to say bleep them picks even quicker than Les Snead would, the Los Angeles Rams general manager. Interesting that Rizzo is at the very top of the list. I have my own list, and it's a very short one. But these are the people that I would like the Houston Astros to make phone calls about. I would like the Astros to make a phone call to Aaron Judge. But here's what I want them to do. I want them to give him an insultingly low offer and then just hang up. Like a prank phone call. That would be kind of funny.
Hey, it's me. It's me, James Click from the grave. Hey, I don't know why I have a southern accent right now, but Aaron, 1 year, $700,000. Yeah, I know you got 62 home runs in that little rinky-dink minor league ballpark you played in, but let me tell you what. You have the opportunity to play for the Houston Astros now. Okay? This is the big leagues. This team actually wins the playoffs. Did you win any games in the playoffs? No, seriously, did you win any games in the playoffs? No, I mean, like, you didn't. I didn't think you made the playoffs, right? Oh, you did? Oh, yeah, the Astros played you. Oh, yeah, we kind of forgot about you. Four games real quick. Over. In the first round of the playoffs, too. So technically, you won no playoff games. So, like, are you a playoff choker? I can't say 1 year, $700,000. Hell, I'm going to, since you're extending my time here, 1 year, $650,000.
Why does he sound like Buddy Garrity?
I don't know. We're just trying to feel.
Trying to build out the character.
Yeah, we're just building a parochial fellow, you know, who is perhaps in Jim Crane's inner circle. I don't know how to do a Jeff Bagwell impersonation or a Reggie Jackson impersonation. The only thing I know how to do as far as Jeff Bagwell post-playing career impersonations is the thing that he did in the behind home plate. Remember that? Anyone? Honk.
Also, you don't know how to do a Reggie Jackson impression?
What do I do?
Must kill the queen.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Must kill the queen.
I must kill the queen. Where's Frank Drebin when you need him? All right. Also, serious list right now as we talk about what the Houston Astros should be looking at. I think you got to take a look at certain outfield names. You know, I have said Andrew Benintendi. Guy's won a gold glove. Guy hits for contact. Feels like another version of Michael Brantley. I don't think you're going to have to pay that much for him. I know some people don't feel the same way, but checks off a lot of boxes that you're looking for. Lefty bat. Got some range. Also, somebody I would like to consider, and maybe this is a possibility for the Astros, if they don't want to put Yordan Alvarez in the field every single day, well, why not have a DH/left field by committee? How about bring J.D. Martinez home? Remember J.D. Martinez? Guy who played for the Houston Astros a long time ago, went off to Detroit, then joined the Boston Red Sox and had a couple of really impressive seasons. Martinez this past year had a pretty good one. Hit .274, 16 home runs, 62 runs batted in. Isn't that a more consistent option as an alternative at DH than what you had going in the playoffs where you had just automatic outs? So that's somebody that I'd want to make a phone call about. I think you're in a pretty good situation when it comes to all of your pitching. So really what I want is outfield depth. And I know that they're going to be looking at first base. If I have to pick between, say, Josh Bell, who was another name that was linked to the Houston Astros, and Rizzo, I want Rizzo. I know Rizzo's 33, but I thought Bell really fell apart when he moved to a winning situation. Does that mean you get him for a little bit less? I don't hate the idea of adding Rizzo. I don't know that I do it to hurt the Yankees, but the guy, I mean, as you heard right there, hit a home run off of Rafael Montero and, of course, game number one of the American League Championship Series. Virginia Buttonweed says, Paul Gallant wants a team of only Jeremy Peñas. Well, that's true. If we could have a team of complete Jeremy Peñas, that would be pretty sick. 713-780-3776. This circles back to a conversation that we were having in the last segment. Paul, why are you bitching about Crane? All he has done is win. First off, why is that the impression that you got, that it's complaining? I think it's a really bad sign to have two former players without a whole lot of qualifications in your ear. And if we're talking about guys who have been involved for what, 1 year, 2 years, you can't really see the potential long-term damage that's done to the organization quite yet. I feel like also, too, guys like that aren't challenging Jim Crane. I just don't think that they are, at least in the way that he needs to be challenged. I think that they're the kind of people that give Crane ideas and Crane wants to follow through on them, as opposed to saying, no, that's dumb. You know, that's, I think, the way that Crane operates, at least based off of this article. And of course, there's a lot of conjecture that comes with making assumptions like that. But asking questions about parts of this organization, to classify that as bitching, I don't know. I think it makes you sound soft. The quest of perfection never ends. That's all anyone should be doing their entire lives. Try to be the best you can be. No, try to be perfect. Do you see problems? Address them. Because the problems get bigger and bigger over time. In any aspect of life. In any aspect of work. So this article, written by someone in Jeff Passan, who some would argue, oh, he's got an agenda against the Astros. I don't feel that way. There have been lots now of articles, whether they're from Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle or Jeff Passan or Michael Schwab, that all seem to be saying the same thing, that Jim Crane is somebody who does not work well with at least James Click, if not, just to put the big word out there, others. He might not work well with others outside of a very select few, like a Jeff Luhnow. If you want to maximize the Astros' ability to win championship after championship after championship, that could be an obstacle. How is that bitching? Like, where am I saying, like, oh, get rid of Jim Crane? No, I mean, baseball is relevant in Houston because of Jim Crane. Like, that's simple. Jim Crane is the reason that there is even good sports in this town right now. Imagine if Drayton McClain was still running this thing. I mean, I remember when I first came in, and again, it kept this way for a couple of years, but no one cared at all. Like, everyone was out. He's a good owner based off of the track record of success, and I don't think that he needs to be criticized ad nauseum for the way that he manages things, the way that he runs his organization. I don't think we have to do it for every single thing, But this article highlights some, I think, potential problems. That's bitching? Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes the reaction to negative discussions, and this doesn't happen in every, this does happen in every city. This isn't just a Houston thing. But sometimes the negative reception to, like, highlighting bad things, you guys don't handle it well. You guys did this with the Rockets in the past. You did this, I think, when the Roberto Osuna trade took place. Like, every now and then, it is fair to question the teams that are in town, even if they are successful. You just want the good times to keep rolling and to put your head in the sand and ignore the potential things that could end this run. This is the greatest run you're ever going to see. You want this thing to continue as long as possible. There will never be another Houston sports run quite like the Houston Astros are doing right now. Guaranteed, it will not happen. This is something else. In a luxury tax era of baseball where teams are not willing to go over that, it's like actually a salary cap now these days, this is not going to happen again in Houston. It might happen somewhere else, like a decade from now or something like that, but this is an incredible run of success. So you should be looking for anything that could potentially end it. And you might have to be a little bit cutthroat on that front. Don't get mad about an article that's getting written about this team, like, and act, oh God, this is the end of the world. No, it's not. It's fair to ask questions at all times. Think I wasn't doing this about the Patriots over the last 20 years, my favorite team? They have had so many issues and so many question marks that they have had to answer. And then they had that long drought in the middle where they weren't winning any Super Bowls. Every single team goes through stuff like this. It's fair to criticize a team. It doesn't not need to be all sunshine and roses. It's kind of soft if you feel, oh, that's bitching. That is very far from complaining. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in too. Coming up next, it's our college football six-pack. In that college football six-pack, you are going to hear one of the most creative takedowns of referees that you'll ever hear, plus an all-timer back in my day from Mike Gundy. It's the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. First, though, let me tell you about my friends at TGS Insurance. Insurance rates are skyrocketing right now. Inflation has made everything more expensive, including your home policy. I'm hearing of customers who had 30, 40, even 50% increases before making the switch to TGS. Why do so many people switch to TGS? Because they make it easy and fast to save money. Their instant quoting system shops the market and delivers you savings in 15 seconds. Why are you waiting? What are you doing? The time to save is right now. So text MONEY on your phone to 232323. Their system will ask you for your address. Send it back and you'll get a full quote with excellent coverage within 15 seconds. TGS and their savings are legit with now over 2,000 five-star reviews. Plus, their average customer from 2022 is still saving over $800 on their home insurance. Ooh, that's pretty nice. Simple, fast, easy, big savings. That's the TGS insurance way. Let them work for you today. One more time, text MONEY to 232323 to get your home insurance quote and save big today.
ESPN 97.5.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to
alleviate
the effects of the...
Time to put down the books and crack open a college football six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Paul Gallant.
Let's do it.
Let's do it!
It is our college football six-pack. Six things that interested me the most from this past weekend of college football. Let's start off with a little more discussion about Sean Mapes' beloved Texas Longhorns, who lost 17-10 to number 4 and undefeated TCU in Austin. They are no longer ranked, and I doubt they will be ranked the rest of the year. Sean, grade UT's season to this point. A through F, where are we at? Yes, they played well against Alabama. They lost. The Texas Tech loss was, I thought, a clown car of bad errors along the way. And then, of course, you have this most recent loss where maybe they shouldn't have been favored, but It was a really ugly display by the offense.
C plus. They're passing, but you know, some meat left on the bone, I suppose. And like you said, the Texas Tech game is just a, like, oh, okay. That's when before the season you're going through win loss records and you never pick that one, but your team always loses that kind of game where you're just like, how'd they lose this one again?
Yeah.
So that's bad. And then the way Quinn Ewers has played for the last like month basically has also not been good. So yeah, I'd probably say a C+, not a complete failure. I mean, at the end of the day, if you would have told me that like this team is remarkably still alive to make the Big 12 championship game, I'd be like, wow, that's crazy. 2 weeks to 2 weeks
that
ago,
is
they're
pretty
still
crazy.
Alive for the Big 12 title game.
The Big 12 is completely drunk outside of TCU.
It's like a good version of the Pac-12.
Yeah,
where there's like they all eat each other, but they're all good teams eating each other.
I gotta say though, the Pac-12 has 6 ranked teams right now. Isn't that insane?
That is pretty crazy.
I can't believe that. We'll talk about more things that shock us and call in just all football, because we have like kind of spent a month not talking about football. Texas wraps up the year at Kansas. Nervous about that one?
Yes. I think they go 1-1, and I legitimately do not know which one they lose and which one they win.
Baylor is the home game as the season finale. Yeah, Kansas is frisky this year, so I wouldn't be feeling good about that one either. Last year, you were feeling great about it, and yeah, look what happened. Okay, we are fair and balanced. Texas A&M lost 13-10 to Auburn. It's their sixth straight loss. It guarantees their first losing campaign since 2009. It makes them the first SEC team to lose out on bowl eligibility this year. They are also dead last in the SEC, behind even Vanderbilt, based off of overall record and based off of conference record. Here is Jimbo Fisher at yesterday's press conference. Are things getting better than they sounded on Saturday, where he really was defeated at that press conference?
We're not in disarray in recruiting. We're not in disarray on our team. Our guys are playing their tails off, playing hard. Got to continue to help them play better, and got a great attitude and with demeanor. I think it looks very good. A lot of heart and a lot of guts, and play hard and play well. And that's exactly what I think they'll do. They've been great spirits yesterday. I'm in meeting, talked to, like we have our unity council groups and meetings, and they're all where they need to be in their stretch and stride groups and their treatments and all the things, and had a very good demeanor, very good attitude, worked out well in the weight room, all showing what they're supposed to do, and this team keeps doing what it's supposed to do. And they'll keep doing that and play well, and we want to play well for those seniors those last two games. Playing for each other in Texas A&M. You got Texas A&M on your jersey, and you play for your teammates, and you play for yourself because you're sending a message of who you are and what you are.
Right. 100%. Jimbo Fisher, everybody. Playing well, playing hard, playing well, doing what you got to do, wearing the jersey on your jersey and making a team do the thing. Move from one thing to the other thing. Score the points. That's Jimbo, everybody. His buyout, again, $85 million, $950,000. And A&M, 34-point favorites against 1-9 UMass this week. Now, UMass, per some, is the worst team in college football.
Great scheduling.
This is a weird one to put in here, right? Before the LSU game. Hey, UMass!
Well, that's what I think basically every SEC team does right before rivalry week. They just put in basically an extra bye week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Alabama's playing Austin Peay this week. That's also another just rando game to have before the Iron Bowl. I'm not sure who Ohio State and Michigan are playing. I think Michigan's playing Illinois, who's ranked.
Yeah, they're playing like actual Big Ten teams.
Both undefeated. I hope they both lose this week. I really do. Mainly because I just don't want an entire week of Big Ten football, especially knowing that this song in the background is going to be the future song of the Big Ten. God, it depresses me. We only got a couple weeks left of it, guys. This being the official theme song of the SEC. Speaking of, 9th-ranked Alabama edged number 11 Ole Miss 30-24 on Saturday. Bryce Young is still Bryce Young. There were some questionable calls, I guess, in this game. Lane Kiffin, head coach of the Rebels, used a very interesting method to complain about the referees while hopefully, at least in his mind, not leaving himself open to a fine. Here is Lane.
talk to his mom, you know, just kind of apologize, even though it's out of our control. So, you know, like she mentioned, it's just a shame her son gets treated different based off what SEC program that he's at on game day and protected different. So, you know, is what it is. And, you know, we move on.
I suspect you won't answer
and
this.
And let's make sure that quote was right. Like she said, not me. I really don't want to get fined today. Can't fine me for what someone else says.
I like the idea of using someone else's mom to complain about the referees. I think that should be done more. Find creative ways to bitch and moan about the refs if you're going to do it.
Yeah, just like even in the post-game press conference, just be like, I was just walking past the fans and they all said that the ref stunk.
I think that one would be a little bit more difficult to pull off. And I
no,
guess
I heard them. I heard them.
Still, I think that one would be a little bit more difficult. I like this one. Very specific. Like, yeah, I had to tell Jackson Dart's mom that when you play Alabama, you're going to get treated differently. You know?
No, you didn't tell that to Jackson Dart's mom. Jackson Dart's
Wait,
mom
yes,
told
thank
that
you.
To you.
I couldn't do this. Sorry. It's hard to complain about the refs. All I will say is when you complain about the refs, generally, you know what's going to happen? You're going to look like a whiner.
Do you think Jackson Dart's mom actually said this, or do you think
no.
Lane Kiffin, a complete fabrication?
It would be interesting if Lane Kiffin was talking to Jackson Dart's mom, though. Joey Freshwater. Does he have that dog in him? I don't know. I can't say. Up next, these per ESPN are the 8 teams that can realistically still make the college football playoff. So, of course, you have the teams at the top of the totem pole. Georgia, undefeated. Ohio State, undefeated. Michigan, undefeated. TCU, weirdly, undefeated. I feel like they're the team that has the most likely chance of falling out of that college football playoff. Tennessee at 9-1, who's at the very least still winning with style points. They scored 66 on Missouri. Missouri was complaining about having the score run up against them on Saturday. LSU, who barely beat Arkansas 13-10. They are 8-2. You have USC from the Pac-12 at 9-1, who just crushed Colorado. And then you have Clemson, please no. Clemson 9-1. So those are the 8 teams that could potentially make it to the college football playoff. That's for Heather Dinesh of ESPN.com. Mike Gundy, you know him for, I'm a man, I'm 40. Well, you also might know him for a lot of his back in my day takes. Here is a very long clip of Mike Gundy being asked about the Bedlam rivalry. And he just doesn't think that kids from this generation take rivalries as seriously as he used to.
I don't think any game makes any difference to him. And honestly, I don't know if it does to any young people anymore. There's so much society today is so different. Like our players, as well as everybody else's players in college football, they communicate through social media. I don't know what it's Instagram and what are the two or three ways they communicate. Like they'll talk to players on the team before we go play them on Saturday. I mean, you know, we go play whoever we played in the bowl at, Notre Dame. They may be talking to those guys for 3 weeks on Instagram and whatever and go play them. Hey, how you doing? Whatever. We never talked to anybody. We didn't like the other team. We didn't want to talk to them. When I was at Middle City, I didn't talk to people from Dell City. We tried to take their girls. We didn't want to talk to them. I mean, when I was at Middle City, we didn't talk to Norman. We didn't talk to Putnam City. It's not that way now. These guys are buddies, and it trickles down from the NFL. The NFL, go to an NFL game an hour before, and when the players all come out, it's a love fest. There's nobody that's the Steel Curtain versus the Cowboys, and it's just not that way anymore. I mean, just being honest with you.
So he thinks that rivalries from college football's past are dead because Generation Z is a bunch of soft, friendly, friend-making, let's just be perfectly honest, non-committed losers. I don't think he's used the L-bomb on them. But he's disappointed that the Bedlam rivalry doesn't matter as much. A lot of that also has to do with the fact that Oklahoma stinks. Oklahoma's so bad this year. One last thing that interested me about this past weekend in college football. UW and Oregon, great rivalry. UW finally beat Oregon for the first time in a while, if I'm not mistaken. Oregon's owned that. It's been essentially like the Texas versus Oklahoma rivalry in that two different states. They don't respect their in-state rival. UW wins the game, and their quarterback, Michael Penix, is very, I think, a compelling player with these two big, massive shots that he had.
With Brandon Dorlas back in on the line. Penix, uncorks, middle of the field, on the hands of Polk, and he is out of here!
Not sure that the broadcast is pronouncing that correctly. Michael Penix had a 72-yard touchdown in this one. Michael Penix also had a 65-yard touchdown in this one.
Penix, clean pocket to throw down the sideline. He drops it in for Davis down the sideline, and there's nobody home.
I'm a professional broadcaster. It's Michael Penix. Come on, I was working in Seattle. I was nearby UW. I know. Hey, Mr. Broadcaster Man. Come on. Michael Penix. Why are you making a face?
Not making a face. No, I'm just looking at the clock.
Okay. 713-780-3776. That's a nice way to get me back on back in line. 713-780-ESPN. It's been a weird NFL season, right? We're gonna play a little game of wait. What? Because let's be honest. We haven't really addressed a lot of football over the course of the last month with the Astros making their World Series run. There's a lot of crazy things that have taken place over the course of the last month. What's the craziest across all football? NFL, college football. I have a list. I'll give it to you next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Locked in with the Paul Gallant Show.
You're locked in here with me.
Please send help from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston, 713-780-3776 to call to text. On the HRNP listener line, you can tweet me at Gallant says Sean Mapes at Sean A. Mapes is behind the glass. Join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. Always an entertaining discussion going on there that generally doesn't have much to do with the show, but I like it. So, say you were to get in a time machine circa, I don't know, like September 20th, to go from where you were starting to focus on the Astros and their postseason run to where we are right now, heading into week 11 of the NFL season, heading into what, week 13? Of the college football playoff season. I think you would be shocked if I told you any of these things and you were just getting out of the DeLorean, the doors are going up, you would lose your bleeping mind. So I'm just going to go through a list of crazy things that have happened over the course of the last month where, at the very least, this show has not been as on top of football as they traditionally are. One, Tua Tagovailoa, Geno Smith, and Jalen Hurts had the league's three best passer ratings. And all of them, at the very least, are fringe MVP candidates, if not your top three MVP candidates. Jalen Hurts, I could have seen at least a high quarterback rating, but I would still have questions about him as a quarterback. I got to say, watching the Eagles-Commanders game last night, I do wonder about his ability to help the Eagles come back. Philly was going to lose at some point. They have won a lot of games in a rather repetitive fashion, and they generally build a huge lead, and they sit on it, and then they run, and they run, and they run some more, whether it's with Hurts or Miles Sanders or Kenneth Gainwell. And they do have good receivers, obviously, in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, but I am shocked that Hurts is having the year that he's having. I'm really shocked that Geno Smith is. I've never thought much of Geno Smith. Even coming out of West Virginia, I was always like, extremely cocky. Always has been. I think a lot of misplaced confidence. I do think that maybe Sunday against the Bucs is reality starting to creep back in. He definitely does things the way that Pete Carroll wants things done. Tua Tagovailoa. Whoa. And I get it. I mean, you add Tyreek Hill, who at one point this year, I think last week, was on pace for 2,000 yards receiving. Still might be at the very least close to that. That offense has been remarkably efficient. Mike McDaniel's definitely in the coach of the year conversation. As the next thing we bring up, both the AFC Easts and NFC Easts are all above 500 from top to bottom, with the Dolphins leading the AFC East, not the Buffalo Bills, who are in third place at 7-3. And that's because the New York Jets, the bleeping Jets, are 6-3 with Zach Wilson playing like what you expected Zach Wilson to be going into the year. Like, not very good. Also, on the NFC side of things, of course, the Eagles have the best record, tied with the Minnesota Vikings in the NFL, but they have the tiebreaker since they beat Minnesota earlier this year. The Giants have the NFC's third best record, at 7-2. Even the Commanders are at 500 in the NFC East. The Cowboys are off to a good start. And then in the AFC East, New England is in last place at 5-4. The Jets, second place. The Bills, third place. Oh, yeah, we mentioned the Vikings just a second ago. What if I told you that we would fast forward to week 11 of the NFL season and Kirk Cousins and the Vikings had the NFL's tied for best record at 8-1 after beating the Buffalo Bills? Kirk Cousins won a big-time game. Wasn't prime time. Did they place at noon? Maybe that's the explanation. Definitely would not have felt that way. Minnesota's been rather fluky with their wins, too. I would say that the two teams at the top of the NFC right now, both Philly and Minnesota, I would feel pretty good picking one of those underdog teams to make it in to the playoffs if the season were to end today. And by the way, if the season were to end today, I saw this tweet last night. The quarterbacks that are starting for NFC playoff teams, if the season were to end today, it's fascinating. So, of course, in the NFC East, Dak Prescott. That's pretty good, right? But you would also have, if the season were to end today, Daniel Jones as a playoff starter with the New York Giants, Jimmy Garoppolo, not Trey Lance, as a starter for the 7-seed San Francisco 49ers. They're only half a game up on the Washington Commanders. Geno Smith, Kirk Cousins, Jalen Hurts, and who's that? Oh, yeah, Tom Brady. I mean, that one makes sense.
What? That guy?
Come on, don't say that. Whoa, you thought he was going through a divorce? He wasn't going to be good this year?
Yeah, I guess the Bucs are just carrying him.
I mean, listen, that's unfair to say. I think he's carrying the Bucs. And I'm actually being serious on that one. By the way, the entire NFC South is 500 or below, and that includes the Bucs. That is a garbage division. The Colts, who fired their coach and hired Jeff Saturday, you could just have left it there, are also 4-5-1. We were talking about this yesterday, Sean. If the NFL draft were to take place right now, the Colts would have what? Like the 18th pick? 15th pick? Something like that? Like, it's impressive. They have somehow found a way, despite being completely disappointing, with all of the three-win teams that are across the league, to be in, like, the mid-tweens.
Yeah, they would add the 15th pick.
15th pick? It's insane. Some more. Just shocking things. Seahawks are in first place in the NFC West. College football, TCU and Kansas State lead the Big 12 at 10-0 and 7-3. Oklahoma is 5-5 with a 2-5 Big 12 record. That's good for second to last after they just lost to West Virginia and lost the tiebreaker there. The Pac-12, 6 ranked teams. What? When has that happened? The Pac-12 has been garbage for a while. And obviously Oregon losing definitely hurts it. USC still, I guess, sort of in the running for the college football playoff. And then one last one. Texas A&M is 3-7. They've lost 6 straight. They have the worst record in the SEC, which is even south of Vanderbilt, 4-6 overall, just 1-5 in the SEC, and will have their first losing season since 2009. So there you go. Shocking things this football season that we maybe have not touched on a lot over the course of the past month, with the Astros, of course, winning their second World Series. Speaking of those Houston Astros, coming up next, I never thought that my favorite Houston Astro would be perhaps as loved as the Beatles, as Justin Bieber, as insert teen heartthrob from Mark Wahlberg all the way to Justin Timberlake. We have the audio to prove it. I'm honestly scared for Jeremy Pena. You'll hear why next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Without further ado, it's my pleasure to announce the 2022 American League Rookie of the Year Award winner is Julio Elite Rodriguez of the Seattle Mariners.
Sometimes you forget that you have audio coming back into a segment. I pulled a Vanessa. We'll hear some Vanessa, actually, in just a moment. It's great to see a Rockets broadcast last night. Not so great to actually watch the Rockets, who have the worst record in the NBA and got their asses kicked by the Los Angeles Clippers. Ugh. Anyway, that was Julio Rodriguez winning the American League Rookie of the Year Award, which isn't surprising. And look, this is not a chance for me to talk about my side piece, okay? I'm not here to tell you about how, like, I still think the Mariners are hot, especially when they put on that teal. Not some stockings too, babe? Huh? Little whale tail action? Hey, bonk, bonk. Stop it, Paul. Fine. I'll stop it. But I was surprised to see the lack of voting that Jeremy Pena got for the American League Rookie of the Year Award. Five people received votes. Julio Rodriguez received 29 first-place votes. One second-place vote. The person from Baltimore who voted for Adley Rutschman should have his credential revoked. Because I don't like Adley's first name. Yeah, I said it. I'm not afraid to say it. Adley Rutschman of the Baltimore Orioles had one first-place vote, 18 second-place votes, 9 third-place votes. Stephen Kwan had 10 second-place votes, and 14 third-place votes. I don't see how Stephen Kwan can have more votes than Jeremy Pena. I know that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but I thought for sure, okay, Jeremy Pena would have been the fourth person when it comes to the voting for the American League Rookie of the Year Award. Who the bleep is Bobby Witt Jr.? Is that a real person? I mean, I wasn't convinced that Adley Rutschman or Stephen Kwan were real people, though Kwan at least did something in the playoffs that merits attention. But Jeremy Pena got just, of all the votes for American League Rookie of the Year, 2 third-place votes. That's it. Less than a Bobby Witt Jr., who, again, I don't believe to be a real person. Stephen Kwan, yeah, he did something in the playoffs. Adley Rutschman, I don't know that he's real either, okay? Am I biased? Yes. Do I not pay attention to baseball outside of Houston? Yes. That said, outrageous. 2 third-place votes? Just absolutely disgusting. And I think it's because it's sexist. Okay? Now, Jeremy Pena had himself a day yesterday. He worked at a Raising Cane's. I guess he was working the drive-thru window. I saw a video, and I teased this. I have only heard a couple of people in my life, some of them not when I was even alive, get the kind of reception that you're just about to hear Jeremy Pena get as a fast food employee for the day. The Beatles, Justin Bieber, NSYNC or the Backstreet Boys, I guess the Jonas Brothers, One Direction, Harry Styles. Like, these are the only people that get this kind of reception. Here is Jeremy Pena sticking his head out of a fast food window at a Raising Cane's yesterday. I mean, and it kept going.
Yeah, it was like 30 seconds longer than that.
I'm concerned for Jeremy Pena. remember last week when we were playing some of the audio from the parade, Mauricio Dubon said there were a ton of people holding up "Marry Me, Jeremy Pena" signs? I am legitimately convinced that some crazy woman is going to kidnap him and put him in the back of a van and live out their own version of the movie Misery, starring Kathy Bates. Yeah, the one where she kidnaps James Caan's character, a writer, puts him in bed, and breaks his ankle so he can't leave the bed until he writes her another book. Kind of what everyone sort of wants to do with George R.R. Martin. But again, back to Jeremy Pena. I am scared for this boy. He is a young man, and he is our man. I guess boy is on extreme. He is 25 years old. But whatever. I legitimately am scared for his safety. He is a handsome guy. There is no denying that. I'm not trying to be creepy. Like, objectively, good-looking guy. The appeal, I don't think it's ever been close here in Houston. Like, I know there was a Jake Mariznick swooning phase, and there were some other guys who really were considered to be hot by Lady Astros fans. But Jeremy Pena, I feel like, needs security at all times now to keep women away from him.
It'd be like if Jake Mariznick also won World Series and ALCS MVP. Like, I think it's also just like he kind of carried the offense. So it's like he was on TV.
Yes.
He was getting all the Fox love.
Yes.
He was getting all the Rookie of the Year, you know, all the rub of being like the guy after Correa. It's the veteran Altuve and the rookie. And then, like, yeah. It's nuts. It's like Elvis. Like when
insane.
He first started dancing.
You're right. It legitimately is like Elvis in that movie that just came out. By the way, I mean, he's on Jimmy Fallon. He's on the late night circuit. I mean, even Vanessa Richardson of the Houston Rockets broadcast is bringing him aboard for interviews during a Rockets game.
World Series MVP Jeremy Pena joins me now. First of all, congratulations. Have you stopped celebrating?
I have not. Yeah, no, that's why I'm here. Hopefully we get it done so I can keep celebrating.
How fun has it been coming off of an incredible World Series win?
I mean, we did what we set out to do. Yeah, now it's just spring training. The goal was to go all the way, win the World Series, and you know we're blessed to be the team that gets to be called the champions at the end of the year.
I feel like everybody in Houston believed in you, but you were a little bit of a surprise for the rest of the country. What was that like?
I mean, I never really saw it like that. You know, just come up and play my game. You know, same game I've been playing my whole life. Have fun, compete, and yeah, win.
Great job. Let's run it back.
Let's run it back. Let's get it.
I do wish Vanessa had sang to him, but I also am glad that she didn't because I would have been so jealous. It's outrageous. Wow, the Houston Rockets broadcast gets to interview Jeremy Pena, but the Paul Gallant Show, the official show of Jeremy Pena, does not? Unless they show up for Astros Media Day before a World Series and wait in line for 15 minutes to get a 3-minute interview where he is too much of a coward to actually sing Jeremy Pena to Jeremy Pena with the guttural enthusiasm necessary to make the bit work? Jeremy Pena! I am a little bit jealous, but I'm happy. I got that was great to see Vanessa up there, and we were texting with Vanessa last night on the broadcast after that was all done. And when she was done, I was like, "Hey, wait a second, what? You got to do an interview with Jeremy Pena?" I'm so happy, but I also am jealous. That's how I work. Anyway, we miss Vanessa. We love Vanessa. It's time for garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Okay. Do you feel bad for gambling addicts that you know? Yasiel Puig just pled guilty to lying to the FBI about an illegal gambling operation. There's a long post courtesy of a retweet by Bob Nightingale that explains his Department of Justice release. The big issue here is that he lied to the FBI. But over a 3-month period, Yasiel Puig made 899 sports bets. And these sports bets, which I imagine were made at some points for other people, were made on like tennis and other things that I can't believe people even gamble on. Do you feel bad for friends that have gambling addictions? Because I know a couple who clearly do. And I'm like, I want to work on that one. You tell me about your wins all the time. I know about your losses.
Yeah. Also, like walking around Circa a couple weeks ago, there were some folks, especially in the sports book, that I was like, oh, man, that they should be on like the campaign for like anti-gambling.
Seriously. I lost everything. My family, my children, my job. And I found myself in jail for years after lying to the FBI. Puig's going to go to jail for this. Pretty crazy. Yasiel Puig. What a story. He's only 31, too. Just completely out of baseball, playing in Korea now. I mean, that was a fun couple of... Was it even a couple of years?
Yeah, it was like 2 years. But yeah, he's younger than Rafael Montero.
Don't rub that in. That's official, by the way. The Astros put out a tweet. This was the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. We appreciate you tuning in today. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify as well. For the texters, the callers, the twitchers, and Sean Mapes behind the glass, I am merely Paul Gallant. So long. Farewell. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.